recently and having been an employee of Rabbi Green for many years, had become someone who deeply had an insight into Rabbi Weinberg's teachings, and Rabbi Greenman is invited to say some words now.
Thank you, Rabbi Harris. Rabbi Marmerstein spoke about when Rav Noach spoke it in Lakewood, when Rav Noach spoke in Lakewood in 1981, and I could say that I'm here because of those talks, and the center is really here. And I'll just tell you quickly, I wasn't prepared to share this, but I think it's very fascinating. When Rav Noach spoke impromptu there, and he was asked to speak again, in part he said, if there's anybody here that wants to come to Israel and study in Israel, study in any yeshiva you want, but do some outreach, I'll pay for the plane ticket. And one person took him up on that, and that was Rabbi Avi Geller. And Rabbi Geller met me on a bus on the way to the beach in Tel Aviv in summer of 83, and that was my beginning of Eshet Torah. So that all started in Lakewood, as Rabbi Marmerstein spoke about. I want to share some personal memories and some thoughts. I don't know really where to begin. You know, how does a person talk about someone who was their father and teacher for 25 years and had the most profound effect on my life? He was the ultimate coach. I always felt like I had somebody who cared for me behind me. I remember being in a important meeting with him. This kind of experience happened on multiple occasions. We'd be in the meeting, and there'd be a boardroom table and something, and his eyes would catch my eyes for a second, and he'd wink at me. And he was very much like that. He always let you know, I'm always with you. And that is such an encouraging, empowering feeling to have somebody like that, especially because of who he was. He had complete devotion and dedication, the likes of which I have never seen elsewhere. You knew that wherever in the world he was eating and breathing and drinking, saving the Jewish people. That was completely on his mind. And he taught us how to do it. He had tremendous bitachon, trust in God, always teaching us to rely on Hashem. It's not us, it's the Almighty. He was a man of incredible principles, tremendous principles. I remember when I was a yeshiva student, I studied in yeshiva from 1984 to 1990, on Purim, I would do skits, jokes, routines, levity, that's the spirit of the day. And he was always very fun. He was always very fun. I'll tell you two Purim stories. I could tell you many. I could spend the whole evening just talking about Purim stories with the Rosh Yeshiva. I'll tell you two Purim stories. Two different types of stories. I told a joke. I was doing a skit, a routine. I told a joke. The place was in stitches. The place was in uproar. I caught the Rosh Yeshiva's face. He was very upset. Or at least he gave off the face that he was upset. Everybody was cracking up. At the end of the night, I said goodbye to the Rosh Yeshiva. He said, I'm not happy with what you said. I said, I couldn't, everyone was drinking. I didn't, was he serious? Was he not serious? I didn't know what's going on. So that was the end of that. I didn't like, that was very weird. Everybody, a few days later, I'm in his office. He calls me to his office. He says, you know, I was very unhappy with that joke that you made on Purim. I said, which joke? I completely didn't even know. He said, which joke? He started telling me. I said, oh, that joke. Everyone loved that joke. He said, yeah, everyone loved that joke. That's a bad joke. Don't ever make that joke again. So what was the joke? So, no, I'm not going to tell you the joke is a joke. I'm going to tell you the man and his principles. It was a joke sort of like, it was a whole skit, and it was kind of like somebody was asking a rabbi, could he do something? And the answer was no, you cannot do that. And the person said, oh, but I'll make a donation. He said, oh, you make a donation? Oh, that's another story. So that was the joke. Well, he said, you don't make jokes like that. So it took me years till I really understood that he was not only very serious. What's bad with that joke? He's like, That's a very sore point. People think, oh, you could pay money and change the rules. So you can't make a joke about that, because even the slightest joke, people think, ah, you really can do that. Everyone was laughing. He was like, that's anything but a joke. Tell you another Purim story. Not the type of Purim story you're familiar with. So I had, all my years at Ishtar, I had this kind of like ongoing skit that was my own skit. And I would do it every Purim, every Hanukkah. It was called Baal Tshuva Hotline. It was like this whole, it was a radio call-in show, Baal Tshuva Hotline, your return is our concern. I did it all the years I was there. It was known in Yerushalayim, that skit, people would come to see the skit. My last year as a student there, for the last Purim, I remember 1984, I didn't do the skit. Because the skit really took a lot of time and preparation. It wasn't like, you know, to write funny lines, it's not a simple thing. It takes time. I didn't do it. After the Purim, the Rosh Yeshiva called me in his office. So he said, what's going on? He said, you know, what happened with Baal Tshuva Hotline? I said, you know, I really didn't have time to put it together. He said, you didn't have time to put it together? You were thinking about yourself. He said, you know, the people came here to hear that? He said, I came to hear that. He said, you think I like all those other skits? That's the skit I like to hear. I was like, well, I didn't know. He said, you should have known. He said, that was selfish. He said, you can't prevent people from having pleasure. He said, don't do that again. Interesting. You would never think. You know, it's like, that's not a simple thing. He was a man of principles. Tremendous principles. I remember years later, I moved to New York. I was living in Brooklyn. There was a very big Rosh Yeshiva there. I was in the base marriage. I was in Yeshiva one night. I was thinking about different problems going on with Jewish people, whatever. I see this big rabbi there. I'm going to go over to this rabbi. And I'm going to ask him his opinion. What about these matters? So I go to this rabbi, very distinguished Rosh Yeshiva, and I ask him a question. The Rosh Yeshiva, there was a particular problem with the Jewish people at the moment. I said, what are we going to do about that? I don't know, it's an important thing. And I went on to a few other problems that were on my mind. He said to me, where did you go to Yeshiva? And from the way that he could ask the question, I could tell that he knew the answer. So I didn't want to tell him the answer.
Yeah.
So I said to him, where does the Rosh Yeshiva think I went to Yeshiva? He said, did you go to Eishu Torah? I said, yeah, I'm an Eishu Torah rabbi. He said, I thought so. I took that as a tremendous compliment. He's like, where do we see people that are, and this is not, you know, specific to me, but people, the Rosh Yeshiva had an ability to tap you, and all of a sudden, the problems of the Jewish people, you felt them as your own. Interestingly, I think one of the greatest lessons that my father, he should live and be well, taught me was the concept of responsibility. You have to be a responsible person. And the Rosh Yeshiva was an incredibly responsible person. And I think that, personally, I connected the Rosh Yeshiva to my father. Immediately when I met him, I felt that he was on that responsibility wavelength. But he taught me responsibility in another stratosphere. He made you feel very uncomfortable. He wasn't necessarily, you know, this lovey-dovey, pleasant, you know, Zadie Santa Claus person that he looked like. He would give it to you straight. You know, the Gemara, Chazal say, "Oy lehem ador she'en l'mochiach." What a generation that doesn't have someone to rebuke them. The Rosh Yeshiva was our rebuker. He would put us in our place. He would wake us up. He would snap us out of things. He looked into us and he saw our potential. He saw our neshamas. I remember one time I was in a gathering and somebody called me by my name. My full name is Yitzchak Binyamin. And the Rosh Yeshiva was there next to me. He said, your name is Yitzchak Binyamin? I said, yeah. He said, that explains everything. I said, explains what? He said, never mind. He didn't know my middle name, Binyamin, but when he heard the middle name, Binyamin, for the first time, he saw certain things. He said, now I understand. He said, I couldn't get it out of him what he understood, but he said, that explains it to me. I mean, he saw my soul. He saw our souls. He was a visionary. I knew a great rabbi, Rav Avram Kramer of blessed memory in Jerusalem, who was a giant in his own right, and I studied by him, and he used to say that, I once asked him, did you ever speak to Rabbi Weinberg, the Rosh Yeshiva, about this? He said, oh no, I would never do that. I thought it was such a weird response. I said, what are you talking about? He said, I would never talk to Rosh Shiva. I said, but you know, sure, I know him for 55 years. I said, so he knew, he was older than him. He learned the Chaim Berlin when he was a child with him. I said, well, why would he talk? He said, I would never talk to Rosh Shiva. I said, why? He said, I would never bother him. I said, what do you mean? He said, whatever that man is thinking, he's thinking on such a deep level. If I were to talk to him, he'd throw his arms around me, he'd give me a hug, he'd give me a kiss. I would never want to bother him. His thoughts are otherworldly thoughts. He said, I would never want to disturb his concentration. And I heard this idea from many great people. They would not want to bother Rosh Shiva. So I tell you that not only was he a visionary, but he had an incredible practical side. When we were buying this building, we had a problem because there weren't enough bathrooms in the building. So I asked him to come to the building to see the building and look around. Mr. Benenson also saw the building. Mr. Benenson Sr., of blessed memory, who this room was named for. And Rabbi Weinberg also came to see the building. And he said, well, you know, what was the problem with bathrooms? I said, yeah, there's no bathrooms here. So he walks around, he goes downstairs, he says, you could build three bathrooms right here. I said, what are you talking about? What's Rosh Shiva saying? He said, knock that wall down, knock that wall down, push this wall in. And the architect was with me. He said, you could build three buildings, right? Three bathrooms. So the architect said, could we do that? He said, yeah. I said, why didn't you tell me that? He just saw it, right? Like, you know, unbelievable. You're like, that's what it was. We have three bathrooms. He saw that. Bing, bang, boom. He was an Eved Hashem. He was a servant of Hashem in every way. He disregarded his own personal needs. He focused only on the Jewish people, on the community. He had incredible goals, grand goals, very specific goals. He would always hit us, what are you living for? What are you living for? And it wasn't a very pleasant, what are you living for? It was like a 2x4. He would use that analogy often. He would take a 2x4. And sometimes he would say, I would like to take a 2x4. You know, and just... He told many jokes about it's getting people to wake up. He had all these clever jokes. He always trying to get us to get it clearer, get strategies to help us reach our goals. He was a Yirei Shemayim. He was someone who feared God. Always was afraid to do the wrong thing. He was very big on having a ma'aracha, an approach to fearing God, loving God, the 48 ways to acquire Torah. Everything was grand and everything was organized. Everything was organized. He taught us not to quit. He did not like quitting. He was not big on quitting. You know, he just like, okay, didn't work, try it again. Try it again. If it's a worthwhile goal, that is, if it's not meant to happen. But he taught us not to quit. And he taught us that every effort that we make is successful. There's no such thing as failure. This lesson kept me in the game for the last 19 years. I've been doing the things that I'm doing. There were different times in my career when it was overwhelmingly difficult, particularly to fundraise, particularly like now. And he would say, it's all up to the Almighty. All you have to do is try. The job is His. Right? He'd say, yes, what are you doing? I'd say, I'm doing A, B, and C. He said, okay, that's great. Do D and E and F. I said, should I drop A, B, and C? No. He said, but do D and F. So now the rabbis say, tefasta merubah lo tefasta. You grab too much, you don't grab it all. You can't grab too many things. So I said, well, what about tefasta merubah lo tefasta? He didn't like the question. I said, what do you mean? I'm doing A, B, and C, and my hands are overwhelmed. He said, that's because you think it's you. If you realize it was the Almighty, you would take it easy. You do your best. The Almighty's taking care of the show. The analogy he always gave was like a crane that's moving these, you know, 5-ton, you know, cement blocks, and there's a person there who's kind of like just moving his arm, pushing around. A person from afar thinks that guy's lifting, you know, 5 tons. But a wise person knows, you know, it's the crane that's just moving it around. He says, all we do is we just move things around like that. The Almighty does all the heavy lifting. He said, don't get excited. Right? He said, but do what you could do. Right? He cared deeply. His caring was legendary. He would sit on the floor at nights and say Tikkun Chatzos and cry bitter tears for the Jewish people, just like Mordechai did in the Megillah that we read yesterday. I remember years ago I was at a partners conference, and in the middle of the night, approximately 3 o'clock in the morning, my wife says, wakes me up and she said, do you hear that? I said, no, hear what? And all of a sudden we start hearing these weird sounds. I said, yeah. She said, what is that? I said, I have no idea. Check that out. So I went into the hall, and I heard these weird sounds, and it seemed like it was coming from the room next to me. Unbeknownst to me, Rabbi Weinberg was in the room right next to me, and I heard these really wild sounds. So the door was open, I walked right in. And I walked in, and they gave him a suite, and there was a suite. I heard this, so I walked in further, and I saw him. He was sitting on the floor crying, wildly crying. And I went over to him, and I saw. I was concerned. Maybe he was in pain, and he was in pain, but it wasn't the physical pain. He was crying for the Jewish people. This is something I've never seen before. And this is something, just like Mordechai in the Megillah. He was a teacher and a doer, always teaching and always doing. He taught us not to stop. Even if we were stuck, said, keep on moving. Count on Hashem and keep on moving. He was a thinker, a huge thinker. He was always thinking big, always innovating and creating. His creative approach to teaching and teaching Torah and learning Torah is legendary. People know that. I mean, so many brilliant sparks that went into different people and created things. Rabbi Goldhar, who you all know, one of the founders of the center, is one who's originated so many things. It's all Rabbi Weinberg. Project Chazon in Brooklyn, it's all Rabbi Weinberg. He lifted people around him from ordinary or even sub-ordinary people to, in many cases, truly great Jews. You know, they say a rising tide carries all ships. The Rosh Yeshiva lifted all Jews around him. He pulled us out of our distractions and got us focused on the bigger picture. He just pulled us out and lifted us up. You know, I asked myself, who's going to do that for us now? Clarity or death? Clarity, you know, we say clarity or death. That was one of his slogans. He had so many slogans. Because he knew that if you want to get people's attention, you've got to make it short and sweet and compact and get it all in there. Clarity or death. He was an expert at BR. Does anyone know what BR is? Show of hands. He would say to me, Yitz, you've got to know how to do BR. Knowing that I don't know what he's talking about. Do you know how to do BR? I said, I don't know. Rebbe, what is BR? He'd say, well, what's CPR? I said, well, CPR, that's cardiopulmonary resuscitation. He said, exactly. He said, now what's BR? I said, brain resuscitation? He said, exactly. He said, people know how to get people to revive their body, but how do you revive someone's mind? How do you revive someone's soul? He said, we have to become BR experts, brain resuscitation. That was one of his things. He had so many of these. They just came out of his pocket. He was thinking, brain resuscitation. And he taught me, he gave me a course in how to do brain resuscitation. He was not PC. He was not politically correct at all. He would tell you straight, often whether you liked it or not, he was respectful, often saying, pardon me. But whenever you got to pardon me, watch out. Pardon me, but you know he was because he wouldn't let us waste our lives. So he was so direct with us. Years ago, I asked him. I said, Rebbe, is it okay to look around to see who Mashiach is? He said, yeah, I do it all the time. I said, really? I said, who do you see? Who is the Rosh Yeshiva see? He said, I haven't got the foggiest idea. I said, really? He said, I haven't got a clue. I said, he said to me, or I said, I do it too. He said, so, no, what do you got? I said, well, could I be, you know, chutzpahdek? He said, yeah. I said, what about the Rosh Hashiva? So he said to me, I can guarantee you one thing, he said. He said, it's not me. That's what he said. I thought he was, you know, and I said, really? He said, absolutely, 10-finger clarity, he said. He said, it's not me. I said, really? He said, no question about it, it's not me. And when he had me completely convinced, I said, okay, I have another idea. So he said, who? So I told him somebody who I thought, you know, in my humble opinion, is maybe in that category. So he said, why do you say that? So I told him an unbelievable experience I had with this gigantic rabbi, which was very Rabbi Weinberg-like. He was very impressed. Immediately he made an appointment. He traveled to see this rabbi. He wanted to see this person. If you told him something, he wanted to know right away. He wanted to understand. It was complete MS, straight, yashrus. Very thankful to the Almighty for bringing me close to such a giant. My whole life gained purpose and clarity thanks to the Rosh Hashiva, blessed memory. A makir to the Rabbanu Shel Olam and to the Rosh Yeshiva for his time his effort and the love that he showed me and my family, always asking about my wife, always. He would call her, my father, ask about my father. My foolishness, I'd ask him something more than one occasion when I was a bachur, can you see my father? He'd go out to lunch with my father in New York, whatever. You know, he would, you know, unbelievable commitment to his students and to every Jew. There was nobody that he really wouldn't. Somebody told the story the other day that they had somebody who was a nuisance, but they kept calling. They wanted to meet every rabbi in Eish HaTorah, and they were chewing their ear off and said, okay, well, I want to meet Rabbi Weinberg. And he kept calling, and they told this guy really just wants to chew your ear off. He said, if he's a Jew, he's got a neshama, I got to meet him. And he took the time to meet him. He would meet everybody. He had an open-door policy. Different rabbis have closed-door policies. Some his was completely open. You can get in there anytime. And just unbelievable. I asked the Rosh Hashanah for mechila, for forgiveness, and I asked that he be a melech yosher for his family, for his children, for his wife, his rebbetzin, and for the whole Jewish people. And I'll just end by telling you that at his shiva, I went to Israel to be at the shiva. There were obviously many sad people. And one of the students was crying. So one of his sons was there. He has 12 children, 8 sons, 4 daughters. And there was a range of emotion there. And one of his sons was a very, very big rabbi in Bnei Brak. Saw this student crying. Said, why are you crying? He's like, what do you want to cry? It's the shiva of your father. What kind of question is that? So he said, listen to me. My father's coming back. He's coming back real soon. Mashiach is just around the corner. He's going to come back. We're going to be with him. Be with Simcha. That's what he said. I mean, just different ways of thinking. Anyway, thank you for listening.